Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Wednesday, July 6th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual tool itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again, absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we hope people do that soon and often because it frequently leads to comments and questions and testimonials and answers, as well as improving the quality of most people's lives when they apply those tools to their lives. If you have any of those comments or questions or testimonials or answers for us, please either email us, tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org, whyagain.org. Or you can give us a call at 563-999-3581. And when you call that number and press 1, it will put little icon of a hand by your phone number, and I'll turn on your microphone and announce you by your area code. And greatly appreciate it whenever anybody does that, because it makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work. The intention we have with this work is to be a service. And if you've got a comment or a question or a testimonial for us, that makes it far easier for us to make this show relevant moment to moment for you. This year we've been working with the Way of Mastery since January 10th. We've been doing the reading with commentary, and I should remind people that the audio files edited to just the first hour since January 10th are available on the MindShiftersAcademy.org website. Special page has some of the highlight shows. I think that's only got about 6 files on it. And then the other page has almost every show we've done, especially those that are relevant to the Way of Mastery with commentary, on a page labeled just for that, on MindShiftersAcademy.org, Way of Mastery with Commentary. Again, I will mention, if you have a question or a comment, please press 1 on your phone, even if I'm in the middle of a monologue or reading something from the Way of Mastery, and I will get to the call as soon as I can or as soon as it feels good for the flow of the work we're doing. We had a support group last night, and we did some Way of Mastery listening for the first hour. And it was that we listened to the Way of Mastery, a channeled session that was done before the book, The Way of Mastery itself, was produced. And this was from the christmind.info website. And if you go there and you click on the link for the Way of Mastery, and then you get to a different page and you scroll down and you click on the link that says Way of Mastery, the early years, then that will take you to a separate page. And from that, we were listening to the Love Heals All Things talk that's about an hour and 17 minutes. And that's a wonderful website to go to because you can listen to it being read, or in this case, channeled directly. At the same time, you can have the text of what is being said scrolling across your screen, so you can read it, read along with it, and or just listen to it and have it play in the background. So that's how we spent the first, or the middle hour of our time yesterday, and then we had discussion about that. And the essence of it is that discussing it is entertainment, and for some people, if they're truly asking questions to remove the roadblocks to their being able to use these tools or step into these practices, it can be beneficial. But it's also important to recognize that reading about it, talking about it, talking about it to other people is not the same as doing the process yourself. And what's the process? The process is practicing the remembrance that you are a spiritual being. That's, you know, the title of the 13th lesson in the Way of Mastery is you are unlimited spirit. And then the practice of recognizing that as an unlimited spirit, what you do with your mind energy is a very powerful creative force. And if you keep doing what you've always done with your mind and with your habits of life, and you're just going to get more of what you've already had. And so the 14th lesson is titled The Wise Use of Time. How can you change what you're doing in your mind with your mind energy? You know, what are you spending time on? Because whatever you're spending your time doing, that's what you truly value. And then the 15th lesson here is trying to get us to understand that we are always making a choice between love and fear. The choice is yours. And it is bringing home to us what the essence of this work is. That you have the choice. I think these 5 words from yesterday's reading, the choice is always yours. That, if you just had 5 words to describe the Way of Mastery, for me that would be it. The choice is always yours. You may choose love or fear in each moment, regardless of what the seemingly external circumstances of your world and your life situation present to you. So where we left off yesterday was right before the next heading, the next segment. The last segment in this lesson is titled Accepting the Resurrection for Yourself. And this is a tricky one for people. It came up in the group last night where people were equating the word Christ with the name Jesus. And so this work and the Course in Miracles and some other great spiritual teachings spend a lot of time trying to help us understand that the name Christ was not Jesus' last name, that the word Christ refers to an office, someone who is anointed, someone who has reached a certain level of awareness. It is not an individual person. There was not the Christ. There is Christed consciousness. There is the Christ mind, which is infinite and pervasive. There is this recognition that certain people have practiced becoming conscious of their ability to tap into a different level of awareness. You might call it the Christ mind, you might call it the God mind, you might call it the Holy Spirit, whatever. And so last night in the group, there were some people who were going back and forth a little bit about how, well, wait a minute, Jesus was the Christ, etc. And in this work, it's really important to understand this work is talking about the Christ mind as a state of mind, as a level of awareness, as a universal consciousness that every human being has access to. That the Christ is not a person who lived and died and then got resurrected. That the Christ mind is this universal consciousness that everyone can get access to. And this book, along with the Course in Miracles, aims at increasing the number of people who are alive and awake and aware on the planet at any one time that are aware of that and can access that higher wisdom, that higher consciousness. So here's a title of a new section, Accepting the Resurrection for Yourself. And the text reads, upon this Easter, or whenever you read this, recognize that you have the power to celebrate and accept your resurrection as the living Christ. You have the power to do that by seeing beyond the boundaries of death, loss, fear, anger, projection, and the perceptions upon which projection rests. You are the one who has been reborn when you choose to remember only loving thoughts. You know, this makes me think of how our Western mind has been so trained into complexities and layers and levels and making everything complicated. But it's just a training in thought. And it's just a process of thought that creates levels and layers of complexities and complications and places them over on top of or between you and the direct experience of life. And the direct experience of life is pretty simple. You are an extension of the creative energy in form. You have the capacity to bless creation in every moment with every breath. You have the capacity to choose an interpretation for everything that unfolds in your life that will leave you grateful for the gift of life itself, and that will leave you in the bliss state. You also have the capacity to choose from myriad, you know, infinite other interpretations that can leave you feeling sad, hurt, scared, conflicted, pained, troubled, overwhelmed, confused. And so in this first paragraph of the last section on lesson 15, it says, you have the power to celebrate and accept your resurrection as the living Christ. And the way you do that is by seeing beyond the boundaries of death and loss and fear and hurt and anger and projection and all of the perceptions upon which your projection rests. You are the one who has been reborn every time you simply choose to remember only loving thoughts. That's how simple this is. Make a choice for love. Make a choice to bless creation in this moment. Make a choice for gratitude. Make a choice to shift to the filter of appreciation. That's as simple as it gets. And that has the infinite power of creation behind it. So when you do that and you choose that, you get the benefits of it. And when you choose something other than that, you create a different experience for yourself. The text goes on and asks, what then is the veil that seems to make it so difficult? How do we get something as simple as, hey, choose for love each new present moment? And that's all you need to do is choose for love, because that's all it really is this flow of life, this flow of creation. How did it get to seem so difficult? Well, it can be only this, that you have accepted into your mind at some level that the world you see is real and that the world you see holds a power to dictate to you whether you will feel peace or disturbance, whether you will feel love or judgment. And the fact of the matter is, this is always an illusion. We talked about in previous lessons, love does not wait on anything but your welcome. There are no preconditions that have to be met before love can show up. Love is the energy of creation expressing in form, and that's you. But every time you think there's more complexity and there's more evil and there's more bad and there's more this and that, you create that experience for yourself. So in the first paragraph it says, listen, you have the power to celebrate and accept your resurrection as the living Christ. But you do that by seeing past the boundaries of death and loss and fear and hurt and anger and projection and all the perceptions upon which your projection rests. If you don't see past that stuff, you stay stuck in it. You think it's real. The things you label death, things you label as loss and fear and hurt, you think they're real. And you think that's all there is. And when you're immersed in that and feeling the energy behind it and focusing exclusively on it, it feels overwhelming. It feels very real, because that's the power of creation that you have to create the experience of loss, of lack, of sadness, of grief, of anger, of hurt. That's how powerfully you create in each new present moment. So then it asks, okay, so what then is the veil that seems to make this so difficult? If the only thing is to choose loving thoughts, and that creates a loving experience for me, how do I get to feel it so difficult? It can only be this, that I have accepted into my mind at some level that the world, the pictures of the world that my mind is showing me, my perception is real, and that my perception holds the power to dictate to me whether or not I'm going to feel peace or disturbance, love or judgment. And every time I believe that, it's an illusion. The text goes on and asks, my question for you is, Would you be willing to surrender your illusions in order to remember the peace of God, the peace of all creation? Just think about that. Will you be willing to surrender your illusions in order to remember the ultimate peace of your existence? The question is whether or not you will accept the atonement for yourself, accept the resurrection for yourself, and be determined to walk this earth as one who has awakened, who has arisen, one who understands that the images their mind shows them are not all there is to be seen, one who has learned to look behind the veil of perception to see the shimmering radiance of the creative energy moving in, through, as, and around them each moment, showing up as every person and everything they interact with all day, every day. So what does all that mean? It means that you have chosen to awaken from the uselessness of separation, from the uselessness of the image of victimhood, and the uselessness of the thought of weakness. And you have chosen to accept the empowerment of becoming responsible for this dimension of creation, the empowerment of deciding to walk the earth as the arisen Christ, walking the earth aware of the fact that you are creating your experience of life moment to moment, that the most precious of all resources you have, that your gift, your treasure, is your awareness of your connection to the Creator, is your awareness that wherever you point your thoughts, you're going to create more of what you're pointing your thoughts towards. The text goes on and says, you've chosen to take the message of an historical event that did occur in time, for if it did not, then someone has managed to fool me. But you've taken that historical event to assimilate it as a symbol of your own life, for you have well been crucified by your own thoughts. And by your own thoughts, you have brought your persecutors to you. And these persecutors have nailed you on the cross a million times so that you could be confronted with the opportunity to look out upon a lovely world by seeing only and seeing all through the eyes of love. Think then for a moment and imagine that you are nailed upon a cross and you are stuck between the vertical axis of eternity and the horizontal axis of time and the body. Imagine that you lift your head upon which you have placed a crown of thorns. What does that represent? It represents the field of the mind as it operates and expresses through the body and through the brain. What's the crown of thorns? It's all of the negative thoughts that you buy into. It's all of the limitations that you buy into. It's all of the identification with everything that's less than love that you buy into. That's what's creating the pain in your skull. Those thorns represent your fearful thoughts, and your fearful thoughts, your unlimited thoughts, that press and poke upon your field of energy. And they give you quite a cosmic headache. And they draw blood. That is, it releases the life force from you, the power from you as it drains down your auric field. And you dissipate yourself, much like a balloon with a slow leak dissipates the power that makes it a balloon. A crown of thorns, quote unquote, a crown of thorns, symbolizes the effect of the thoughts you insist upon whenever you rest in judgment or anger or hurt or fear. That is, when you choose to deny love. This is pretty intense stuff. Very simple, very basic, and yet it's very intense. Most people do not want to hear about giving up their thoughts about who they are. Most people have so heavily invested in their thoughts about themselves that they will forego the peace of the Creator. Right? Earlier it said, my question for you is, would you be willing to surrender your illusions in order to remember the peace of God, the peace of love, the peace of Christ, the peace of the Creator? Why would we even need to ask that question unless we know we've run into a lot of people who will not give up their thoughts of themselves, who will insist on the validity of their negative thoughts, despite the fact that it's only arguing for their negative thoughts that's creating their suffering. Nothing else creates my suffering except my arguing for my negative thoughts. The text goes on and says, the nails merely represent that which would hold you stuck in a dimension. The horizontal dimension of the body and of time, which would nail your feet to the world, down to earth, they call it. Yet above you, the crown of your head is open heavenward, and you are free to receive the love of the Creator, to choose only loving thoughts, to look gently upon everyone and every event, seeing only perfect innocence. You're always free to choose. Right? The choice is always yours. Those five words summarizing this book, the choice is always yours. And never, ever has there been such a thing as a victim, except in the illusions, except in the way we define it, except in the fantasy of separation. So the nails represent that which would hold you stuck in a dimension, the horizontal dimension of the body and of time, which you would use to nail your feet to the world, to keep you down to earth, as they call it. And yet above you, the crown of your head is open heavenward, and you are free to receive the love of the Creator, to choose only loving thoughts, to look gently upon everyone and every event, seeing only perfect innocence. Now, you may not be well practiced at that, but it is a possibility. It is something you can learn to do. It is a skill you can cultivate. So the text goes on and says, so imagine now that you lift your head and you realize the blood is dripping from my brow by my own hand. The crown of thorns was placed upon me by those who came to serve me, to shock me into the remembrance that I have allowed myself at times, to have thoughts of negativity, limitation, and fear. Wow, no wonder I have such a headache. I'm choosing thoughts of negativity, limitation, and fear. I'm pouring energy into them as though they are my lifeline and I value them above all things. Argue for why we need to go to war against these people and to beat those people up and to shout those people down, and I will argue for that. And then later in the day, I'll be amazed that I've got a migraine going. I'm the one that chooses the negative thoughts that create my experience of life. And I'm the one that chooses the positive, loving thoughts that also create my experience of life. The text goes on and says, you look to the left, to the right, and you see your wrists bound on the horizontal plane by a nail, a hard piece of iron, cold and thoughtless. How many times have you bound yourself to the things of time through your own thoughtlessness, through your own coldness? You turn to look down at your feet. They're crossed over, resting gently upon a small wooden slab with a nail through them. as though the world was saying, don't you dare try to rise above our level of consciousness. How dare you mirror to us the truth of our being by always being so sickeningly loving. There are people who literally don't want to hear positive, optimistic, loving, gentle, compassionate, grateful, appreciative thoughts. They just don't want to hear it. Why? Well, because it disrupts their illusion, their hallucination, their fantasy of separation, their fantasy of being a victim. Some people are so well attached, so solidly attached to their role as the downtrodden or victim or weak or helpless or small that they will crush themselves rather than give it up. The text goes on and says, the world will seek to nail you down to earth by insisting that you think with it, with the world. Get in line. Think what we tell you to think. Don't question us. Be angry at them. Be rageful at that person. Be afraid of that person. For remember always that the world, not the earth, but the world of human experience, is the attempt to create that which is the opposite of actuality, opposite of the reality of life. Like many who would gather together to take a drug and think that their insanity is the same as the bliss and ecstasy of union with their creator. Yet, they would not dare drive an automobile when they're under the influence of that drug. And they cannot think a coherent thought, and they do not even remember where they are. There are people who run from the truth of their life, even with the use of drugs. And they promote it to others, and they say, look, you need this to get closer to God. But the insanity of it is that it's a temporary drug-induced high. It's not the same as the bliss and ecstasy of being created, of being in conscious awareness to your connection to your source. The text goes on and says, now you turn your eyes from the roar and the din of the world. You see the soldiers, you see your persecutors, totally unconscious, totally conformed to the authority of the world, so that they have donned the armor, the headpieces, the footwear, and they carry the spears of a god made as a substitute for love. And you look up upon the fearful crowd, and you see some friends who still see your soul, your Christ-mindedness, and they continue to love you. Yet even they are veiled by their belief that death and loss are possible. So you are completely alone in this moment. No one is going to save you. No one is going to rescue you. It is between you and your Creator. It is a decision you must make to be determined to choose only what is real, regardless of what the eyes seem to show you and what every mind around you seems to believe. Even those who professed belief in your message of love. For they look upon the body and an old belief takes hold. Wow, the body is what is real. After all, look at this. It's nailed to a cross. This is true limitation. This proves that the world's thinking is true. And so you must lift your eyes from the world that you think you see and choose to accept actuality, the reality of life. Here it quotes, Father, into thy hands I commend my spirit. And then it says, this is nothing more than the choice for sanity in the midst of all conditions. This is the choice for what is eternal in the field of what is temporal, temporary. This is a choice for what is unlimited in the field of what seems to be limitation. This is the choice for sanity in the field of what seems to be pervaded by insanity. This is the choice to remember only thoughts born in love. And then your eyes look down again, and something has changed. You are at peace. You recognize that you are above the world. You are above the crowd. And a gentle sweetness begins to pervade your entire beingness. All pain and suffering is forgotten. The nails can hold you no longer. The world cannot keep you down in its insanity. The eyes of the body close, and as they close, the world they had shown you recedes, and the real, the actual world appears. And you rest in perfect remembrance that you are one with the Creator. Your attention drifts away from the insanity. You're quite aware that you can still see your friends. You see the soldiers. You see the tears and the tumult. You see some who are merely standing quietly, and you bless them and release them to have the perceptions that they would choose. For you, you have come to love yourself so much that you will accept only what is real. It is finished. The resurrection now begins. Easter is your birthday. Easter is a time to celebrate that the crown of thorns has been removed because you have chosen to think only loving thoughts. Imagine that. The headache, the blood dripping, the pain, the agony, the limitation is instantly removed when you choose to think only loving thoughts. And that you have remembered the power given unto you through which you transcend the awful, dreaded, and suffering-filled experience that is born of fear. For in love, there is only peace. In love, there is only the infinitude of pure spirit. In love, Christ is restored to your consciousness. In love, you are returned. Easter is for you, not for me. Therefore, set aside your images and your practices of me. Make no pilgrimage to me. Make a pilgrimage to the heart of your true self by looking upon all that you see this day and seeing its beauty, its harmlessness, and by knowing that you are looking out through the eyes of the arisen Christ. You are that one. You are that one with me who has overcome the world. What can there be left to do but to celebrate with your brothers and sisters? What can there be left to do but laugh, sing, play, and to remember in quiet devotion the love your Creator has always had for you? You can choose only between love and fear. In love, you are resurrected. In fear, you are crucified. What then will be your choice in this lesson in which death offers you eternal life? We would ask that you read this lesson many times, for here alone do you find the magic doorway set before you always. The only choice that matters is before you now, as it is always, either love or fear. Resurrection or crucifixion? Joy or suffering? Unlimitedness or smallness? The choice is always yours. There are those five words again. Summary of the entire three books, The Choice Is Always Yours. And like me, upon a cross so long ago, no one can make the decision for you. No one causes your perceptions. Your perceptions flow from your choice for either crucifixion or resurrection. I know where I would choose to have you join me. Know then that I love you always in the ways that you will allow and to the depths that you will accept. Choose then with me and you are free. Peace, beloved friends, peace to the only begotten of the Creator, the resurrected Christ, or the crucified body and the egoic mind. You get to choose. And your choice is as valid in each and every moment as it is in the next moment. And in every moment, you can choose love or fear. And as you do, you create your life experience. And nothing else creates that for you. Amen. So, that's the end of Lesson 15, and Lesson 16 gets a little bit weird, so we're not going to charge into Lesson 16 for now. And since this lesson again reminds us, you know what, you might want to go back and read this many times. For here alone do you find the magic. The doorway set before you always. The only choice that matters is before you right now. And it's always the same. Do you choose love or do you choose fear? Do you choose resurrection or crucifixion? Do you choose joy or suffering? Do you choose unlimitedness or smallness? The choice is always yours. So, our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and we've got about 15 or 17 minutes left of the first hour that we can entertain your comments or questions, answers, suggestions, refutations. Would you like to refute something that's been shared? Give us a call, 563-999-3581, and press 1, and we can have a conversation. We had one of the larger groups we've had in quite a while last night. We had some people get disrupted because of power outages and storms that were coming through that had to drop off the call. But we had somebody that never joined us before, and so that's something to mention again for tomorrow, because tomorrow's another Thursday, and on Tuesdays and Thursdays we have a support group. And we'd either be thrilled to have you join us or have you pass the information along to somebody that you think might be interested in joining us. And all the information for that is on the website at mindshiftersacademy.org. So what's on your mind? How can we support you? We have about 15, 16 minutes left. We've got 8 or 9 or 10 callers on the line, depending upon what moment I look at it. I think this is Susan. Is this Susan?
It is. Hi, Dr. Kim.
Oh, Susan, we haven't spoken in quite a while. How are you?
I am doing or attempting to do exactly what you were reading about. It started with one of the exercises of just asking, looking at something and going into the history of how that thing appeared first in our life and kind of finding our way to God right through that little exercise. The exercise itself has morphed into a new kind of prayer practice, but it's an attempt to do exactly what this chapter is about. I go on my morning walk. And I decide that I am going to have only Christ thoughts. And then it morphed into having Christ talk to me as in the form of Jesus. But I love that part about this isn't about a man making it exclusive in any way, but in the Hindu tradition, they call it your chosen ideal, and Jesus is my chosen ideal, but a Muslim or anybody could do this, and you said that, read it, and that was great. It's as if I can change my voice into the voice of love, a loving voice that is coaching me, because I'm still experiencing myself as bothered by things, triggered by things, in pain by things, puzzled by things. But I do these walks, and sometimes I even take out my iPhone and talk into my notes. You know how you can use that little microphone? It's as if I could write a whole book to myself or anybody else, because it's universal, on how to be and how to feel and how to think about just about anything. This is just a report. I really don't have a question in this, except that I still feel like I woke up last night in the middle of the night, and before I could get my resolve rolling, I allowed my thoughts to be very negative and scary and do my old thing, remembering dumb things I've done or whatever. It doesn't matter what it is, but it's, and I've talked about this before, the vulnerability of waking up in the middle of the night and being not on enough or conscious enough or well enough to be able to choose love. I find myself underwater, swimming hard to get to the surface to choose the love again. And I just totally loved this reading today because you were right on exactly the stuff that I'm trying to do. So I guess this is just a report, but I would love any kind of tips from anybody listening or from you or reminders from the reading, how to get to this point of listening to the loving voice without having to go through the morass of like worksheets. I did so many of them during the post-Easter, you know, 50 days of Easter, without having to go through all that. Or maybe we just have to go through that. I'm going to stop there and see if there's a comment in you.
Well, the thing that comes to mind is what Michael Rice would say, the three P's, practice, practice, practice. So if I have, you know, like in my case, a solid 45 years of life training, and let's say that you give me the first 3 years for, you know, give me the first 3 years off because I didn't really have language. So for,
right,
you know, when I was 45 years old and somebody introduced me to this work and questioning it at this fundamental level, I'd had 42 solid years of conditioning to thinking the negative thoughts and thinking I was right and I was justified in my negativity, and the more angry I got, the more right it meant I was. And that's a lot of years. That's a lot of conditioning. That's a very strong habit. That's got a lot of momentum behind it. And the other trick with this is that I've also been conditioned for those 42 years to think that I needed to think my way out of it. I needed to find an answer within the conscious, logical, intellectual mind. And that's a trap, because it's literally the misapplication of my conscious, logical mind energy that is creating the suffering that I say I want to get out of. And so we hit pretty much this very same thing at the end of last night's support group, where somebody was talking at probably for several minutes, long, wordy, talking about how do we figure out this and that and what little thing can I do. And essentially, they're trying to conceptualize with their words and their thoughts what their life is going to be like after they've made this transition, after they've been able to step out of the intellectual obsession and step into the awakened heart, experiencing life with openness, etc. And you cannot imagine that. It will not ever be what your thoughts are telling you it should be. You can step into the practice, and you can learn to shift away from striving for something into allowing the flow of life, allowing yourself to experience things, right? That's something we hit in an earlier lesson. We're being asked to stop all the striving that our family and our culture and our language and our structures of thought and religions have drilled into us is so important, to strive to be a better person, etc. And we're being asked to explore what it's like to allow life, allow love, allow the flow of consciousness, allow a connection to the Christ mind, allow the Holy Spirit, allow ourselves to be taught by the flow of life rather than thinking we have to be smarter than the flow of life and we have to direct it and we have to find a way to get life to give in to our demands.
Dr. Tim, can I interrupt you for a second? Can you hear me all right?
Yep. Yes.
Because your voice is breaking up more and more, and I may be the only one experiencing that. I've understood everything you said, but it takes some effort. I wonder if anybody else on the line, did you change locations or anything while you were talking? Because the reading was perfectly clear.
No, I'm just sitting here in the same chair in the same office.
Weird. Well, it may be just me. And there isn't much time left, and we can continue this way. The practice is the key word, but it's a kind of pressureful practice that maybe needs to be let go, in my case, of just being peaceful about it, intending, putting the mind in that direction, asking to be shown how to do this, and then allowing whatever good is there come through without, I'm still struggling too much, I can tell by the way you're talking. So,
well, and this is exactly what the person in the group last night came up with, is that the word she was using for it was she's got a problem with trust and faith.
Yeah.
She wants a guarantee that if she relaxes and allows and gives up striving and cancels the negative thoughts and just settles into whatever's there, that that's going to be better and that that's going to work out well. And she wants to know ahead of time how it's going to be better and how it's going to work out.
Yeah.
And that's just more of that intellectual processing, churning away, thinking that it knows better than the flow of life.
Good thought.
It's essentially recognizing that we don't trust life, we don't trust life, love, God, etc.
True. Tim, I'm going to hang up and dial in again, so be right back.
So, it's about the difference between striving and allowing, surrendering. Guy Finley has a talk where he says, you know, it is absolutely essential that every attempt you make to get to know God fails miserably. It's essential that you fail to know God, to have God alive and awakened and present in your life, because only after you fail at everything you can think of doing do you finally relax and let God get you instead of you trying to get to God.
My cat is joining you now. Yeah, much better. reception, so it was me. So great thought. In fact, if you would repeat that, I think I got it, but do you mind repeating it?
Well, it's kind of the summary of, he tells a story about a woman that decides to go up to this mountain where she's heard that, if you find this spring, this little mountain spring up there, and you drink from it, you get total enlightenment. You get, everything works out beautifully. And so she goes up there, and she's searching. She's visited several times over the years. And finally, one day when she's up there, she's thinking she sees the place where the spring might be just because of the change in terrain and whatnot. And so she begs. She's on her knees, and she's begging and pleading, The ground swells with a vibration, and she thinks she hears, "Give me what I want." And that's it. Now she's lit on fire, and now she hikes back down the mountain, and she tells everybody about it, and she thinks she's found it, and all we have to do is give the mountain what it wants, and then we will get this enlightenment. So then friends went up with her, and they sat and meditated, and they prayed, and they made a little altar, and eventually they built a whole shrine up there. They had all these materials flown in, and they built this shrine. Nothing. There was never any water. There was never another sound. Years of this. And finally, she goes up there in a rage, and she destroys the altar, and she smashes every stone, and she's angry at the mountain. She's angry at God, etc. And then she collapses. And as she's collapsing in a puddle of tears and sweat, she sobs out, "I don't know what you want." And when she wakes up, the stream is bubbling right by her head.
Oh, boy, that's great. Give up. Just practice,
right?
but give up.
And so Guy Finley talks about how it is necessary that everything you do to try to get to God, to know God, to be one with God, fails miserably so that God, the Creator, life itself, can bring you into alignment with it. That God can get you rather than you getting God. So the word for the day is allowing, and the word that we're trying to release is our striving and moving into alignment and learning to live through questioning rather than knowing. This is the opposite of the Western mind. The Western mind teaches us that we have to learn and study and work hard to know and know and know. And this level of spiritual teaching says, what you really need to do is quit the idea that you're going to learn it at that level and you're going to know it at that level and just allow the flow of life and allow yourself to accept it and surrender to it and bless it and choose only loving thoughts as it's unfolding, and that's how you create an entirely different life for yourself. It's not about the outside things. It's about the inside job you're doing to create your suffering or your joy.
And the way you can trust it is any loving thought is a God thought. It doesn't have to feel as if it's coming from outside or something. Right?
Yes. Absolutely. If you're creating a sense that, it's not the right one because it didn't come from somewhere, then that's more intellectual garbage. That's you judging and assessing and evaluating and twisting and distorting rather than just being in allowance and surrender. So you've done
thanks.
It. Once again, thank you for chiming in here in the last few minutes and spending some time with us. I appreciate hearing from you as always, and good luck allowing.
Thanks.
Blessings. And I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tam. Appreciate you. Good conversation.
You're very welcome and deserved.
Thank you, Susan.
Have a great show.
Yay. Thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. Today is Wednesday, July the 6th, 2022. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And I did send Michael a text because he is on a different time zone, just to remind him it was showtime, and he gave me a thumbs up and a heart, so I'm assuming he's going to be with us here in just a minute. So we'll give him a moment to get dialed in. I'll let him give the update on Joel. Michael did drive to Nashville yesterday morning. He had gotten the message that a good friend of his, Joel Goldstein, had about 24 hours to live. And so Michael wanted to get there and be with him and give support to him and the family and assist in his transition. And like I said, I'll let Michael give the update on that. They have gotten a miracle. And I am sure that Michael's energy is a big part of what gave that uplift into the energy. So we'll give him just a moment to get dialed in. And thanks for your prayers and your support in my direction. I am feeling 100% better. I have Aria today, and so she's actually down for a nap right now during showtime. She tried her best. She said, well, change the showtime. I'm not ready to nap. And I said, well, that's not possible. I can't change the showtime. So anyway, she's funny. She's a jewel. So I invite you to go to our website, which is whyagain.org, and just look around. There's lots of changes and new things. And if you see something that's not working, please drop me a line at Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, whyagain.org, and let me know about that. And I'll get it fixed as quickly as I can. Also on our website, if you go to schedules, and we've said this before, there's information on the monthly Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing, and we have moved it out. It's usually the second Saturday of every month, but it's not going to be this coming Saturday. We've moved it out a week to July the 16th. So anybody who has not participated in it and is interested in it, you've got time to get registered and get your Mind Shifters going, and then we will meet at 11 o'clock on the 16th. That's 11 o'clock Eastern time on the 16th for breathing, and then we'll meet on Tuesday evening, the 19th at 7 o'clock to do processing. So, and then also under schedule is the Global Book Club, and you can join that. Both of the Global Book Club is free. There is a fee to the Mind Shifters, and you can join either 1 month or 3 months or for the year. And so let us know if you're interested in participating in that. And then also under schedules, you'll find the free 3-hour Why Is This Happening to Me Again? That's a workshop that Michael did here just recently. So this is a new workshop, and it's free. You can click on that and stream it, or you can download it, either one. And then there's the Codependence and Communication Self-Study, and that's 90 hours, and you do that on your own time at your own pace. And so that's out there as well. So we've got several things going. Michael's going to be up. He's with Joel for the rest of this week, and then this weekend he's going up to Boston to meet Dr. John, and they're working on some medical things up there, and then he'll be back here with me next week sometime. And hope he has safe travels, and Michael's just joined us, and I told them that I was going to allow you to give the update on Joel.
Yeah, sweet. Well, we had a raucous night, an interesting night. I stayed with him at the hospital last night. When I got there, he was pretty much lethargic. The hospice people, about, 16 or 18 hours before, giving him 12 to 24 hours to live, so he had no vital signs. His kidneys were at 20%, his heart was at 35%, and he was on his way out. So when I got here, he was pretty lethargic, and he would respond to a question with a squeeze of the hand. So you knew he could hear you, but he wasn't very cognizant, communicative. And one of the things Joel is into is music, so we did a little bit of hands-on work with him. And then,
you're a little muffled, Michael. Can you get closer to the mic or something?
Okay. Is that better?
Much better, yes.
Okay. All right. I'll hold it up then. So for those that don't know Joel, Joel is a songwriter, and Joel will write a song about anything and everything. So so I said, Joel, you know, here you are laying in this bed. He's pretty non-responsive. Here you are laying in this bed. There's got to be a song in this. And so I started out with, well, here I am just laying in the bed, and I'm wondering what's going on in my head. And all of a sudden he starts humming and humming along with me. And within about a half an hour, we were chatting and talking, and he was pretty much cognizant and has been since. It was a fairly long night. He sang half the night as I was trying to sleep. They have an extra bed in the room. So so he sang a good part of the night. He one of his passions, aside from music, because he's had such a difficult time as a musician, is he wants to create a pathway for other musicians to get their music out. So about midnight last night, he's proposing a business proposal. We were going to partnership in the music business, and I manage him, and we create a way for other musicians to get their music out. So through the night, there were fits of sleep for both of us, and moments of lucid and not so lucid conversation from him about what he wanted to do with this new business and how he was going to. He had two new albums to record. Sang a good part of the night, and this morning he was rock and roll early. When they pronounced him, I guess one of the things that hospice looks for is blood pressure, and he had zero blood pressure. They couldn't get a blood pressure reading on him. It was that low, kidneys and heart at the level they were. They're like, well, this is it. And so last night when they came in, they had a blood pressure of something like 96 over 65, and then late last night it was up over 106 over 70 or so, and this morning was up in about that same range. So the doctor came in and said, well, and they had planned last week to get him home in under hospice care and had it all prepped and ready for him to arrive, and then when this happened yesterday, day before yesterday, and hospice said, well, there's no time to do that. You're not going to get him home in time to do anything. You know, he's going to pass. So the doctor came in this morning, checked him out. He's on no meds. He's got no pain medication. And I said, well, we're going to work on getting you home. So anyway, we had fun. I just before I left, took his hand out of the Avacyn we're working on. He's got a lot of edema going on in his body, so we're kind of getting the edema out, and very much like Dad's feet and legs. So his son and I worked on his feet last night and got a bunch of the fluid out, and he maintained it fairly well through the night. And I found out it's something that's been going on with him for a long time, and he's pre-diabetic, so some neuropathy probably happened in his feet. So all in all, it's been an interesting and a good time. At one point, he looked at me last night and said, Michael, you know, you're my best friend. Okay, I'll go for that. He repeated that two or three times, so that was pretty sweet. And then the nurse came in, or the hospice nurse came in, and she's like, I didn't believe he was going to be here today when I arrived. He should be gone. And I followed her out after she did his vitals. I said, well, what do you think? She said, I don't believe this. Like, well, it's true, so let's go for it. And so, any event, that's what's happening here. And I'm heading up Friday. I fly out here to Boston. We've talked about the healthcare program that we're working on creating. And so I'm going to, I'm driving as we speak. I just came out of the hospital, heading to a place where I can get a manicure and a pedicure. I don't really want to show up in this physician's office with my farmer nails, with the garden nails, or the black and the dirt under my toenails and my fingernails. So that's what's up for me. How about you, sweetie?
Been a busy day here in Bristol. Aria arrived at 7 o'clock, and about She pointed at the clock about 8:15 and said, clock's not working. And so I thought, wow, because it felt like she had been here for like 3 or 4 hours, so I thought it wasn't working either. So I went and changed the batteries, and when I went to set it, it had the right time on it. So it's just we had done so much in such a short period of time. And we've painted and we've done projects. We've fixed pictures. I mean, just tons of stuff. And I told her, I said, okay, it's time to rest, and I'll go do the show. And she goes, well, I'm not ready to rest. Change the show. And I said, well, I can't quite do that. I said, the time is set, and that's when I have to do it. I said, so you're going to have to just go ahead and rest. So she gave in. But she's funny, but she is full speed today.
Yeah, she's on it. Well, I love the way the painting
yeah.
that she did of the X's and O's. That was pretty nice.
You just faded out again.
It was pretty cool to see the colors that she did matching the emotions and how that whole
yeah.
emotional education for her is fitting in. And
yeah, it's
she,
actually.
Have you shared about what happened to her with Ryan? And
no,
what came up for
I didn't. She was telling me as we were painting, and she says, okay, so this color is, you know, confidence, and this color is sadness, and this color is anger or madness, and this color is joy. And so as we're painting, you know, she's telling me what each color represents. And she goes, you know, I had sadness come in me the other day. Yeah. And she says, I had sadness come in me the other day. And I thought, well, that is a really cool way of saying it instead of saying I was sad. And I explained to her, I said, you know, all you are is love. And I said, so when those other things come up, I said, that's not who we are. So I said, that was a perfect way of saying that the sadness just came in you. And I said, tell me about it. And she said, well, I wanted Daddy, and Mommy said I couldn't have him right then because he was working with the pups. Now, what she calls pups are like horses. They're huge dogs. And she said, and sadness came up, and I cried. And I said, well, I said, what was your goal? And she looked at me, and I said, a goal is what you want. I said, so what is it? What was it that you wanted? And she said, I wanted Daddy. And I said, okay. And so then if you cancel the goal to have Daddy, I said, then you can get back to peace. And she goes, yeah, I stopped crying. So it was pretty cool to have that conversation with her.
Absolutely. I think of all the conversations we have with her, it's like, God, would I have been nice to have been three and or four and have these kind of conversations with the adults around me.
Yeah, for sure.
Life would be a different game. So that's what's happening on this end. In the meantime, our call-in number, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, is 563-999-3581. And if you're listening where we can't tune into you, then you can't talk to us. So if you call that number, you're listening directly to the show. And then if you push 1 when you're listening directly to the show, that will open or raise a hand in the control panel, and we'll be able to have a conversation. So what I would love to do is hear Jeannie say, oh, there's a hand up. Well, let's have a conversation. What's happening for you? What's on your mind? How can we support you? And or what's your take on the tools? Is there anything we can do to fill in the blanks or share perhaps what Jeannie was just talking about when she said, so what was your goal, Arya? And Arya realizes it was she wanted Daddy. And why? What? Why would she cancel the goal for that? What's that got to do with anything?
Hold your microphone back up.
Okay. So how can we support you? What is happening in your world? What's on your mind? 563-999-3581. Let's talk about it. Other than that, do we have anything happening in the chat room, sweetie?
No, it's all quiet on both the switchboard and the chat room. So somebody press one. We got 44 minutes.
Yeah, lots of time for conversation. And
I was thinking, you know, the topic I was thinking about looking at is tying in with this idea of goals and the number of things we have goals around. And you know, people talk about stressful situations. But you notice that there's some people that are in what everybody else calls a stressful situation, and they have no stress, they have no disturbance, they have no upset. So is the situation distressing? Is there stress in the situation? I'd offer no, never. No situation is ever stressful. However, situations do resonate goals, and it is the setting of a goal that creates the stress that activates the power person dynamic if you haven't resolved it. I was talking to someone the other day, and he said, well, and he's been working a long time. We've been having a lot of conversations. He's a physician that's working with teaching this work. And he said, well, what if we, I was talking to somebody the other day, and he said, well, it's kind of, it's the same thing as a preference, right? So what if we just called it preference? It's like, no, that won't work. For years, I've had people who want to change the word, try to define it as something different. No, preferences don't create stress. You know, let's say, you know, I want to go boating tomorrow afternoon. And, you know, if I don't get to go boating, I'm going to do some writing. So I have a preference for boating, but it's not something I've committed myself to. Now, if I've got a goal to boat and it's pouring rain, I may go into some sort of, you know, things aren't going my way, and be right back landed in a power person dynamic because my stress is elevated. But preferences don't create stresses, and preferences don't lock one in or carry one toward a power person dynamic because of that. So it's clearly when I'm committed to completing something, when I'm completed to having myself do something that I've made a commitment to, or I have a commitment to someone else completing what it is that I have for them, then I've set a goal in my mind. Now I've created myself a stress. And so you want to look at different situations where you might be stressed and what to do about that. Reduce your stress. One of the areas is, and you'll notice that generally speaking, or oftentimes, stress comes up around, and you have to get really conscious in order to correct this one. Stress comes up around people who do things differently than you do. Now, why would you get stressed over somebody doing something differently than you? Because you hold a goal for people to do things the way you do them. So often you're like, well, do it my way. What does that mean? Well, if I get a voice going of do it my way, a voice of hostility, then I can rest assured that my power person used a voice of hostility with me, and the stress, the excess stress that I created by wanting them to do it the way I wanted them to do it, has resonated the power person dynamic, and the power person dynamic takes over. And to have a goal for somebody else to do it the way you do it is to create a stress in yourself that is absolutely, totally, completely useless. Unless you're planning to be all-powerful and you're going to change everybody in the world. And if you hold that goal, and believe me, you're not going to change everybody else in the world, you'll end up shooting disapproval through your body. You'll exacerbate your own insanity and come a step closer to being controlled by your own unconscious power person dynamics. Remember, you get the original, they get the carbon copy. So stop the disapproval. Stop trying to get everybody to do it and to be able to force everybody to do things the way you want it done. Again, unless you're going to be all powerful and change everybody and everything, and then you'll destroy yourself with stress. So it's time in those situations where you want people to do it the way you want it done to cancel the goal and recognize they're different. And here's the thing. If you were able to force them to do it the way you want to do it, you would change them, and you wouldn't just change that thing that you want them to do, but you change them energetically at their root. And perhaps that would be the destruction of, this is, I think, what happens in many relationships. That would be the destruction of, changing them at the root would be the destruction of everything that attracts you to them. That's where relationships end. Okay, I'll kowtow and I'll do it your way every time. And if I forget, you'll remind me, I know, and you'll shoot me that disapproval. And when you do that, you kill something in the people that you're trying to force to do it your way. Viva la difference. Recognize people do things differently. And, you know, if you got somebody that's been living their lives successfully for, you know, 1 or 2 or 3 or 10 decades, is it really your place to change the way they do what they do, even if it doesn't fit the way you do it? So approve of the way they do it because, what? Guess what? You deserve approval. Well, wait a minute. You just said approve of them. Yeah, well, remember, you get the original. Why do you want to start approving of the people that previously, because they weren't doing it your way, you disapproved of? You get the original. So when you approve of it, you get the approval first. And, you know, that's the way you get approval. You receive it by giving it. It goes through your energy field by giving it, not by other. You'll notice if you've got a disapproval issue and somebody stands there and approves you, you know, they call them attaboys. They give you 1,000 attaboys, and then there's one disapproval. Notice the whole attaboy thing collapses because the disapproval's inside yourself. The way you get approval is by handing it to other people. That's how you get the original energy of it. And they deserve that approval as well. And especially because they're so committed to doing it the way they do it, like they're a unique individual and they have the liberty to do things the way they choose to do it, that they give you the gift of showing you that that's part of yourself that you need to heal. Just stop and think about it. How did it feel when your power person disapproved of you? How does it feel when your power person tried to tell you how to do everything you were supposed to do, and when you said, excuse me, I have a different way, they said, no, that's not acceptable, and shot that bolt of disapproval at you? Now you know that they had a power person dynamic who had a power person dynamic, and it's time for that to stop. So if you remember how that disapproval felt in interaction with your power person, and the thought disorders that went along with it, why do you keep doing that to yourself by disapproving of others? And via projection, why do you withhold disapproval from them? And when you do that, you know, basically the idea of you have to do it my way is you want others to same as you, and I'm kind of making up some language there. You want them to same as you. Insist that they do that, and guess what? You've destroyed your own uniqueness. You shattered it the way your power person did because you're replicating the power person dynamic. And again, if you destroy what's attractive about them by forcing them to be the same as you, you know, then maybe that's how you get them to break down, collapse, crash, influence the parts of them that attracted you to them in the first place. So, you know, it's like when you take the package, you take the whole package. Now, that doesn't mean, oh, there's something that needs to be addressed. There's an issue here. Yeah, that's a different story. But this is where I'm talking about people who just have different styles. And what do you shoot at the person who doesn't follow your style as though there's only one right way to do anything? And how did that old one go? The definition of a genius, somebody that agrees with me? Can you approve of people that you totally, completely disagree with? Now, that doesn't mean if they're out doing criminal behavior, do you just let them walk all over you? That doesn't mean that if they do something criminally in front of you, you can approve of them. You can hold the space for them and say, you know, buddy, I can see that you're heading for prison. And, you know, if that's what you want to do, I'll hold the space. I'll hold you in love. And it's my job right now to pick up the phone and call the police because I saw what happened. And, yes, I will go to court and testify to hold you accountable for what you did. But that's different than somebody who does things just differently than I do.
And so to recognize if that's an issue for you, how much of a stress that is in your life, because notice you can do it with your kids and your parents and your spouse and your neighbors and the government and, you know, the guy down the block and your boss and the others at work. And, you know, and there are all kinds of people you do that with, and just literally eradicate your health with stress around that one single issue. And so it's probably going to be a big issue for a lot of people to withdraw the need to control how everybody does everything. You know, the stress of running the world, it's best left to the creator. It's you're never going to get it. And if you did have the power to change it, you would just vary the state of imperfection. Now, you would be able to go, oh, look, everybody's okay, they're doing it the way I do. And everybody else would go, well, I'm not, you know, they're not doing it the way I do. And so at what point do we actually leave the space for liberty and hold the space of actual love and approval for those around us? Again, children, parents. You know, if you look at any time that you've ever had a stress with a child, notice it was because you were disapproving of something that you were doing. Well, but we had to get out the door. Yeah, so what? Notice where your mind went, and where your mind went was to a power person dynamic. How did it feel when your power person did that to you? Do you want to impact your children with that? Or do you get conscious and go, ah, I have a goal. I'm turning to some form of hostility here. I can't be at peace. I'm ready to boil over, which means this is my forgiveness opportunity. This is where I get to do my work. And the word forgive in Aramaic means, it's the word is shabag or shabak, and it means to cancel, to let loose, to untie. So when I recognize I hold a goal for anyone to do anything differently or to do anything at all, well, gee, Michael, what, are you saying we can't expect anybody to do anything? No, expect all the cooperation that goes on in the world, have goals for all the cooperation that goes on in the world. But recognize that if you load a goal and that goal resonates some form of hostility or fear in you, that's your work. It's got nothing to do with them anymore. It's now a totally and completely internal process. And you remember Francois Fenelon and what we read of him and what he said is lying in the unconscious of everybody. If you ever want to be a fully awake, aware, realized, conscious spiritual being, you're going to have to face everything that Fenelon talked about. Remember, one of the things he talks about is how when we start to look inside, there are these filthy reptiles. And that's about what it looks like. And that's a passage that he wrote 300 years ago. And so stress management, cleaning up stress. Stress rejection tip. And that was my thought for today. And if you're out there in listener land, does that resonate anything for you? Does that get anything moving for you? If so, again, our call-in number, if you're listening on one of those stations where we can't see you, it's 563-999-3581. How can we support you? Let's talk about it. There are a lot of refinements to be had on that. It's like a really major issue in life and relationships. You know, you look at what's going on in the political scene. What do we have? People who want everybody else to do what they want, and they're willing to kill for it. That's how much stress they're under. They're willing to abuse. They're willing to do all kinds of crazy things. And when we get crazy, there's forgiveness work to be done. And, again, forgiveness has nothing to do with I let you off the hook for what's moving in me. It's recognize that what's moving in me is my part that wants to explode in insanity. And instead of exploding in insanity, I'm going to use the forgiveness process to drop into direct relationship with the underlying energetic patterns behind my insanity, and I'm going to take responsibility for them, and I'm going to work through them. And that's where we want to go with it.
And we have a hand up.
Awesome. Let's say hello.
I believe it's Miss Julie from Ashland, Oregon, 541. You are on the air.
Hey, young lady, welcome.
Loud and clear.
Wait, you're good. I still have work to do.
No, no, you're kidding. I thought you'd be finished by now. Yeah, it's a bear, isn't it?
But it's... But
now,
if
you got somebody in your life that if they just do everything the way you want them to, everything in your life would be just fine. Have you got somebody like that?
I don't really believe that anymore. But I just...
anymore. When did you give it up? About 10 minutes ago?
Well, okay, I haven't given up because I know there's still more work to do, right? And so I will continue my work. Yeah, but I just thought I should report because I was so elated the other day on June 30th that I'd had all this breakthrough, and I want to validate the truth of it, which was, you know, that I felt a shift inside of me about an issue I was working on. Yeah, and I projected, though, that it traveled over to the other person and made a shift that was going to make everything easier now. And remember, I continued to extrapolate that the whole world could be saved because this whole thing works so well. You know, and so what's coming back home to roost is that, you know, I have work still to do, and I only got so far with it then. It's a bigger issue. And you caught
next
me.
Layer.
Yeah, with my, even my languaging was still there in hostility, you know. And so for people who didn't hear the show on the 30th, it's pretty amazing if you want to look back at it, because I'm going to continue now, and I'll briefly summarize that if you want me to, Michael. I don't know. I mean,
go for
it. It seems to be fairly interesting. Well, so I had a family. I'm a piano teacher, and I have a family that I've been teaching for years, their daughter. And so they had seen a piano of mine.
We can just cut right to the bottom line.
Yeah, well, so they had bought a piano from me for their daughter, and hadn't paid for it, and I was getting anxious about that and didn't like the idea that I was going to have to wait for payments because I hadn't signed up to be a bank, you know. So it was all verbal and trust, and then now it's this story and that story as to why they can't pay for it. So I went into a meeting to sort out what was owed, and I had written it out as a statement for him to see as we discussed it. And he had a way of skirting the issue about the piano, but he did pay me for the piano lessons. And so reflecting on it, I went away from the meeting feeling like he really didn't come up with anything towards this $10,000 purchase. Okay, it's quite a bit. And I had delivered it to him way back in February, so it's been almost 6 months.
So let's get to the bottom. We don't need to know when you all that stuff. Just what's the bottom line that you're heading for that you want to share with us?
The bottom line for now is that so I made my decision to say either pay the whole full amount or there's only two choices, and I'm going to take the piano back. Okay, so that was all that, so we all agreed. I was coming from hostility and fear, but cloaked it with what else can I do, which wasn't really a loving solution that I thought I was going to be having. So I have more work to do on my hostility and wanting to punish and my feeling scared and hurt of a power person dynamic, which I've been uncovering somewhat. Meanwhile, I'm making arrangements to take the piano back to just get the slate clean again. However, I know that doesn't clean the late, really, necessarily. I have to do my work. But it takes it back into my control or my power. It's my property. And so they've agreed to return it to me. So that's where it's at. And, you know, I did get a response later. I worked this out with his wife because she wasn't there at the meeting the other day. And so I got a text back from him, and he's, of course, responding with hurt and hostility and punishment. So, but he's saying, take the piano, but that's it. We're done. You know, no more, you know, he said, you have no reason to enter our home again, that kind of thing. So, you know, it's not as loving, but in the big picture, it is. I know that because I recruited the truth in me as I could, and I asked myself to see the picture clearly, and although I did act from a place of fear that I wouldn't get my piano back, and I was going to lose.
So what shifted you? What shifted in you in this whole thing?
Well, before 3 days ago or whatever, the 30th, I really thought there could be a loving solution. But then I was uncomfortable when
so
I left
are you
the
recognizing
meeting.
Are you recognizing that you weren't coming from love when you came up with that solution?
Yes. Yes.
So how many worksheets
really
have you done on that?
I just am starting. I'm just starting.
Okay.
So, and I really see that that's what's there to do. So I'm going to, and it's going to be great. I'm just admitting that, you know, as great as it felt, you know, 5 days ago or 7 days ago, a week, you know, I am keeping the truth of that vision and goal. True. I mean, I'm validating that and upholding that, but I know I have to clear out what's attached to it. What?
Please, Jeannie.
I was just going to ask Michael, is that not though she's, I mean, even though there was still some fear there, she was holding him accountable, which especially for
reasonable.
Something that pricey was reasonable.
Yep.
And yes, there's definitely
actually,
work still to be done. That was kind of like problem solving, right?
Yeah.
Yes. That would be it. That's
yeah.
the problem solving. And there's
yeah.
more to it. That when we complete this yeah. conversation, I've got another piece of the puzzle to bring up that might give you more opportunities.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay, I definitely want your input, and I'm thinking, is there more to the piece? I feel dismayed also that it didn't work out. And though I felt that, yes, the accountability thing needed to be there both for me and him. And I did try to approach that at the meeting, and he went sideways on me, and I went into, oh, no, the power person is doing that to me, even though I didn't see it at the time. But,
right.
I wimped out. I didn't stick to – I barely had a backbone feeling going into it. So –
okay.
I have all that work to do, which is going to be good for me, and I feel like I can't do his work for him or them.
Nope.
They, you know, and if the more I point my finger at what I think they should do about it, you know, I'm not doing my work. So I'm just going to let that go and, you know, see what happens
well,
if I do my work. Okay. Go ahead.
You can approach a situation like that as love, with love in your being, and still hold him accountable for his part. And for me, accountability would look like how long has he had the piano?
Are you asking me?
Yes.
Yeah. And I mentioned that to him, you know, that it's
how long has he had
six
the piano?
Months. 6 months.
Okay. So then accountability, real accountability would look like, one, when you say you're picking it up, are you picking it up or are they having someone pick it up and delivering it to you, paying for it? And how did it get to their house? Did you pay for it?
Yeah, right. So there's more that
okay.
they should reimburse
so,
you for.
So
yes.
So my take would be that they've had the use of the piano for 6 months and you deserve to recoup some sort of a rental fee for that. That would be reasonable, as opposed to, oh, well, get out of my house and I'll have nothing more to do with you. So you lose a client and you've lost your piano for 6 months and you paid for delivering it and paying for picking it up. I think that a settlement where it's going to be returned, there has to be, I would be in the position of saying, and here's what a piano like this would rent for, and look on the market, what's a piece of $10,000 equipment rent for 6 months for personal use like that, and what are the expenses involved in having moved it, what's the wear and tear on the piano? And I'd be saying, you know, there's your next conversation, your next layer of accountability, and maybe since you were able to work it out with the wife, perhaps make sure that your meeting is with both of them the next time, and that it's just, you know, here's just and fair behavior. You want, you know, when that the attitude talks about just and fair behavior between people, it means that I'm going to be just and fair with you, and I'm going to hold you accountable for being just and fair with me. And to just say, oh, well, I'll pay all the expenses, and I've been out of piano for 6 months, but, oh, well, then that's it. That, to me, wouldn't be accountability. So I'm sure that will give you, or I suspect that will give you, some more opportunities to learn forgiveness and to be able to stand with a true backbone that, and you know, oftentimes people look at a backbone as, can you be angry? Can you be hostile? Can you fight for what you want? But a real backbone means, I have a straight energy field connected to love, with which I speak from love for what I'm owed, what just and fair behavior would be. And so, you know, there might be a few dozen worksheets to do before you have that conversation and take it to the next level.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it could shift. It could shift many times between now and when the movers come. So,
So that would be what accountability would look like. Oftentimes people in this work say, well, what's accountability look like? Well, that's what it would look like. It doesn't look like accountability to say, okay, well, I'll just pay to bring it back. I paid to send it there, and I'm out the money and out 6 months of use of my piano. Oh, well, too bad. That's not accountability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
accountability would be speaking up for just and fair behavior. What do you deserve? What does he owe? You've done your part. You delivered the piano to him, it sounds like, at your expense. You're picking the piano up at your expense. And so what does just and fair behavior look like? He's the one who said, I'll buy it and I'll pay for it in the time frame, and collapsed on his contract. And so in order to hold him accountable, there has to be some accountability for what the expenses were. I don't know what renting a piano for 6 months looks like, but I bet if you called one of the local piano stores and said, hey, I'm looking at, you know, such and such a model piano, what would it cost to rent that $10,000 piano, have it delivered and picked up, and before you pick it up,
well,
present him with
I
both he and his wife with
that
the bill.
Research. I did that research, and it was, I got figures depending on, you know, if it was for an event, it could be really a lot of money, or just a monthly would be $250. Which I had in mind and he had in mind. So we actually did have a match on that, but he didn't offer any payment now towards it. He just talked about a future payment of $2,500 a month that he's hoping to get from a drug deal gone bad. So that was a little bit of the weakness that I didn't want to be involved in, too.
Wait a minute. You just add another wrinkle. Did I just hear you say he's a drug dealer? I mean, are you serious with that?
Well, Oregon allows medicinal, you know, it's been legal for a while and it's all over the place. I mean, the neighborhood smells like it. But I think he had his own stuff that he sold on the side, and he was expecting money and had all kinds of stories as to why it had not been, you know, sold. And it was weird for me. It's been weird for me the whole time to be in their home like that. So I was just, when I was making this decision to get my piano back, I was basically willing to just end it all too, because the energy's not right for my mom's piano or me or anything. I don't operate like that, you know. So
Well, that certainly
Yeah, and
that
so
certainly
when
introduces
I talk to his
another
mom,
wrinkle
the wife
of risk at elevating his stress.
Yeah.
Drug dealers are not necessarily known for being honorable or loving, gentle,
mm-hmm.
and respectful with the people around them with whom they point their hostility. And so that could introduce another wrinkle in what, you know, is the reward that you'll get by confronting that worth the possible risk if he has that kind of potential? That's certainly another wrinkle as to what are you willing to do?
Thank you. So, you know, down the line, well, I don't want to take up the whole show, but I have other options
We're here in process, and this is an example for everybody. So it's not just you. Everybody's in on this. This is the kind of accountability issue that everybody gets to face. And my other offering would be, you know, from a business perspective, there are other options.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for instance, if he said, I'll pay you $2,500 a month. And, of course, you're in the question. Gee, it's been 6 months. You haven't paid me yet. Why would you start now? So the other thing that you could do is, okay, then I'll make the arrangement to do the $2,500 a month. And what are you going to do for security?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Right.
You're going to conditionally sign over the title to your $10,000 car. Or you're going to give me a second mortgage on your house. There are other ways to secure that he will follow through, so that, you know, that might be another option as well,
But I can keep this ball rolling and offer solutions and come to maybe a structured written agreement. And I just wanted to say
one that protects you.
That's what's really needed is spell it out in writing. And so it's just an opportunity to basically erase what's happened and get it right again the way it was.
Yep.
And then I don't also have to continue with him at all, really. I can continue to find another home for the piano.
Right.
You know?
Yes.
And So I have a little bit more to this story that I have to work on, which is when I had sold my house and was moving, I didn't know what to do with the piano. So it was recommended or suggested to me, why don't you give it to my mother's assisted care, memory care home? They don't have a piano there and they'd probably like it. So I did do that. And then I asked for it back. She had passed away. And I said, you know, I want it back because I wanted to get the $10,000, right? So
sure.
I reneged in a way, you know, like, well, you know, the agreement was never written out, but I felt like I had a right to take it back because nobody had.
Yeah. If it was conditional on your mom is there and you're putting it there for your mom's sake as well as everybody else's, I don't think there's any breaking of your word to say now she's not there, so I want my property back. That's reasonable. That's just nothing out of integrity with that.
The thing is, okay, good. I feel good about that. But so then again, having it in a place where it's loved and respected, I found out through this whole process, is really important to me. And you know, every time I taught a piano lesson there, I smelled and all my stuff smelled like marijuana when I left. And I just thought that's not a great environment for that, for all the love I've put into that piano.
Yeah.
So
I hear you.
Just energetically making a different decision now and doing my work, which it's a great lesson. This is big for me.
Mm-hmm.
Whipping
well,
out.
It's nice that you're energetically
out.
Dedicated to doing it with love in your heart.
For myself, too. Right.
Yeah. Or maybe even more than love in your heart is to recognize that the heart is a brain that's being, you know, scientifically they're saying the heart is a brain, the same as your brain is a brain. There's another one there, and it's the one that has to be, in order to function, has to be connected to love, to the human being. And my take is that when love is connected to your heart and your heart is connected, that brain in your heart is connected to the brain in your brain, then you actually have a device that empowers you to be truly human. And that's the bottom line of it all to begin with, is to function to be truly human, to come out of the animal nature. You know, we've got this hostile, crazy world that we've come up out of that's dog eat dog. And now we're not in the food chain anymore, but we're behaving as though we are. And I remember when Patrick Quinn, the first year he was at Heartland, he had, you know, had PTSD and was going to be sequestered away by the military for long-term mental care in an institution due to PTSD and hostility. And that first summer, Patrick, I mean, it was like opening a whole new world for him. And there was a point when he was out in the woods. Ari was in the kitchen, and you know, all the people had been through Heartland. Ari said the only person he was ever really terrified of was Patrick. And one day, Patrick, I was there in the kitchen, and Patrick came in, and he'd been out in the woods, and it was a hot, sweaty day, and Patrick looked like a madman. And he came in, and he said, I just learned that, you know, and we have ticks and chiggers at heart. And he's like, I just learned that I'm not in the food chain if I'm functioning as love. He said, I was out there in the woods and I was eaten alive. And he said, and I shifted and I wasn't in the food chain anymore. They weren't interested in me.
Oh, wow.
And so when we really function as human beings, we've stepped out of the food chain. Now, we could tell you story after story. We were in Florida once and there was a fellow who was who went out running every day. We were in a kind of an inlet off of the ocean, and there were some side roads, and he'd go running, and he came back, you know, eyes big as saucers from his run, and shared with the group that he had gone down one of these side roads as he's out doing his run, and two Dobermans came after him. And we'd just been talking about functioning as love and, you know, like snapping, raging Dobermans, like they're ready to tear him apart. And he said, I just remembered that I'm love. And he said, I shifted to that. And I sent that energy to those dogs, and they both just got quiet and, you know, just stopped the chase. Just literally, he said, just stopped. And he said, I got two opportunities that because I went back into fear for a minute, and they started up again. And he said, I went back to love. And those dogs stopped chasing me when I did that.
It's so
and
true.
So the dogs of the world, be they human or otherwise, will let go of that game when we truly function as humans. And until then, you know, here we are in relationship with people where we get opportunities to learn forgiveness and to step up to that. And of course, the more cooperative, the more we can live via the commitment in relationship with each other. As we learn that, even when our insanity comes up, the easier, the more fun it gets to be, and the more rewarding our relationships get to be. And the more our internal health improves, increases, and becomes what is really designed for human beings.
And
so nice work.
Such a wonderful place to be. I prefer it.
Yeah.
And so this work, though, I mean, this is requiring a lot of me. But it's not hard anymore. Like, I don't resist it. I recognize it as a gateway, the opening. And
that's
so
it.
I was excited on June 30th about the opening for all humanity, you know. But I have I have my humanity as my laboratory, you know, to work
it
out.
Each of us does.
Mm-hmm.
Each of us does. And, you know, you go back to Yeshua. And this is exactly what he was speaking about when he said he wasn't talking about some kind of religious principle. He wasn't talking about some place off in the sky when he said, seek ye first the kingdom of heaven. And that, in Aramaic, those words, kingdom of heaven, properly translated, would be more like the kingdom of love. Seek ye first the kingdom of love rather than the payment on your piano. And then hold people accountable for the payment on your piano.
Yeah, it's called, you've defined it as a community of love. Yeah.
That's it, exactly, from the Aramaic.
Yeah, and so means. Community. So there's my choice. You know, I do my work, and as I lift out of my fear and hostility, then I'm able to approach the situation as a human being and offer more. Offer the gift of some sort of awareness that can bring it into well-being for both of us. And that may be a lofty goal that doesn't work every time I try until it finally works because I finally have uncovered my root enough, you know.
And you know, the opportunity that's there is to get to the point where you go beyond yourself and you can offer that presence of love even to people who don't appear to deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
And by offering it, you get to receive it. And sometimes, you know, no matter, you know, the best laid place of plants of mice and men, the next layer of your work comes up and here we go, next layer of work.
So I might add another factor. Just a reminder that this is the same family that I've spoken about maybe two or three times in the past on the show, who are parents to this little girl who's just about going to be 10, I think, now, but I've had her since she was 5. And she would be in tears at so many of her lessons because, you know, I sensed that there was abuse because I taught in their home the whole time. Nobody had a car to get
right.
to me. So I, you know, there's been this energy of, you must be obedient and strictness, you know, and so I resonated from my own childhood. And anyway, one time the mom even out loud threatened to go get the belt. And I mentioned that on the show once. And so I've been protecting her and, you know, I thinking I could and trying to just really be there for her. And she, I know, latched on to the love that she sensed in me and has, you know, appreciated it. Anyway, there's
nice
so much connection. Yeah. But see, I'm just now remembering during my vacation in Spain, I actually somehow went into an awareness about my own childhood and my father standing over the crib while I'm crying for whatever reason, or he's had trying to be in attendance, and yet I was picking up weird energy. So we've talked about this before, Michael, how
right.
it's nonverbal, right? And but I
yes.
got some insight that what it was that he was feeling, my father was feeling, was that he was roped into this situation, that he had gotten married and has a child now and all this because they got pregnant, you know. And so nobody's ever told me that I wasn't born on the right day, but, you know, I've had this feeling. So, but there was just this frustration, anger, energy, this awareness of what have I gotten myself into. And so when someone feels roped into something, I mean, I don't know where that expression comes from, but, you know, like being hanged, you know, like,
well, we're right
know.
Back to where we started the monologue today.
I didn't hear the beginning.
You want to go back and listen to it, because basically it's the old I want what I want when I want it, and you better do it my way, and how that's all based in goals and the trauma that it creates within the individual doing it, and they're just replicating a power person dynamic and what they pass on to the next generation. And that's a big concern for sure.
And so this energy was activated in me too, like feeling roped into a deal that I didn't know how I got myself into it, you know, and so I was thinking of how to get out of it and energetically
so remember
that it was
that,
wrong for me, you know.
Yeah. Notice that you described the thought as a feeling, and I think there's probably a feeling attached to it. So the thought disorder is I've been roped in. The feeling, remember, that doesn't come from the event in the world. That comes from inside of you and from the thought disorder. That's what you need to be forgiving.
Right.
That's what you
need
to be removing. And it might be exactly father's thought.
Well, I'm feeling
exactly
it in my solar plexus. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, so then that's where our worksheet is, right?
There
that's
you go.
Yay.
Yeah. That's it. Yes,
yeah.
ma'am.
Okay.
Awesome.
Yeah, I can do the physical.
Well, we're down to the last few
symptoms.
Seconds.
Thank you. Right. Okay. All right.
Okay. Well, the show's going to cut us off. We'll just say thank you for all that sharing. I think that whole accountability piece is a gift for everybody. and to hold the space. Blessings. Bye-bye.